And we're live, everyone, for a new episode of the Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Winshaw. How are you doing today, Seth?
I'm good, Fred.
All right, let's dive in. We have a bunch of news. We're going to start with an email that we, we're going to discuss basically the end of the quarter push and the delivery predictions and so forth. And starting with a cryptic email that Elon sent to all employees this week that Electric obtained. It was a short email, and I say cryptic because we've seen similar emails in the past, but with a lot more information. This time it was like you need to sort of read between the lines. So let me just read you the full email since it's that short. For many reasons, a great deal of Tesla execution worldwide is packed into the final week of the quarter. It is very important that we go all out through end of June 30th. To ensure a good outcome. Wouldn't bring this up if not very important. Okay. So I think Elon likes the phrase all out, going all out. Like he's used that a bunch of times before. I don't know if you noticed. And he used that to rally the troops at the end of quarters before too. But the last time he used it, he was talking about like, oh, we're so close to profitability. Let's go all out and try to achieve that. Or we're so close to a record delivery, let's go all out. This time there's none of that, so he's only talking about a possible like good outcome. So now we have to speculate on what is this good outcome, and of course it's going everywhere. The two main suspicions are either a delivery record for a Q2, which sounds crazy. But then Tesla did that last quarter too, even though there was people thought that we're going to be worse in terms of deliveries and because of the last few weeks of the quarter and the pandemic starting and everything in the US. But they did beat the previous Q1 record. The last Q2 record was 95,000 deliveries. So that sounds kind of impossible to reach with over a month of shutdown at Fremont and, of course, disruption throughout Tesla's entire operation around the world because of disruption, restriction related to curbing the spread of the pandemic. But from what we are starting to hear now in terms of the numbers coming out of several markets, including the U.S., Tesla might be in a much better position than we previously thought. I mean, if you've been following the podcast for the last few weeks, at first, like at the very beginning of the quarter, I was in the side that thought that it was going to be a bloodbath, basically. Like, this is going to have a big quarter that they're going to have to bite the bullet and then just like try to ride the ship in Q3.
Well, Elon was certainly acting as if like they didn't open the factory, you know, as soon as possible, like it would be the end of the world for Tesla.
Pretty much. Yeah.
That kind of gave the impression that they were kind of on death's door, not death's door. They're not going to die, but you know, that they were in big trouble. So, you know, having a record quarter on the back of opening early. I don't know if that it's the right signal to send, but you know, I think there's been a huge pent up demand for Model Y all over the world. I think they can probably sell as many as they made. And it sounds like, you know, beyond that 1 month closure, they probably had everything going at full bore. Sounds like they're, you know, that might have cost them some quality assurance on some of those as well. But, you know, I think a lot of people are taking deliveries, even though a lot of other people probably declined their deliveries because of the quality issues, or some people may have canceled because of the economic uncertainty.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was definitely sort of panicking at first at the beginning of the quarter. So like everybody else started panic, basically. But yeah, as the quarter went on, I grew more optimistic about Tesla sales. And the last time we spoke, I was like thinking like 60,000 is now doable and probably conservative. But now I'm going way up than that. Like I got some good sources within Tesla that and take all this with a grain of salt still, because, sorry about that. Tesla keeps their delivery numbers close to their chest. And even within Tesla, like not many people know actually where they are standing right now. They are keeping all the information close, but still you can gather some kind of information around it. And it looks like Tesla could be in the not just the US, in North America, close to 50,000, around 50,000 units, even maybe a little more right now in North America, with 8,000 to 10,000 more units in transit right now. And the problem is delivering those, of course, is a big issue. And that's actually related to what Elon tweeted the other day. He said, apologies to Tesla customer for shifting delivery dates. It's a crazy world right now. And he thanked like Tesla's partner when it comes to transport, because it's difficult. And from what I'm hearing from inside Tesla, they are having issues with rail yards and trucking companies right now that are like the work hasn't slowed down for them. Like, there's been a ton of work, but they've been they had a bunch of restriction in terms of social distancing and everything, and that has caused some productivity issues in their operation. So it's harder to get things to customers at this point, and that includes also Tesla and its vehicles. So a lot of people have been suffering from delivery delays, and the goal is to really get as many as possible as those 8,000 to 10,000 vehicles in transit in North America to customers. So I don't know how many of those will be in the next few days, but that will make a big difference. Like, it would maybe even make the difference between Tesla reaching the delivery goal or not, which I think it would be the Q2 record of 95,000 units. Because if you break it down, China is obviously going to be the one that makes a difference here. I think they're going to reach 30,000 deliveries in China. If they don't, that would be an issue. It could even be a little more, and that would definitely help Tesla a lot. In Europe is going to be awful for sure, because the factory shutdown actually happened during the cycle where Tesla is normally producing cars for Europe. So if you don't know how it works, normally Tesla produce vehicles in cycle in batches for specific markets so that you can ship them all at once and save money on logistics. But yeah, the shutdown happened around the time where Tesla normally do its quarterly production for the European markets, just like it is now for the next quarter. And so the factory shifted producing car for Europe, and Tesla's delivery operation focuses on delivering the car that was previously made for the North American market, which is shorter transit time. Everything makes sense. Anyway, we already have the first 2 months of deliveries information from Europe, and it stands at just over like 5,000 units. And of course, normally the third month is when everything spikes up, because ships have arrived and unload and delivered to customers. But what I'm understanding right now is, like, while there are a few ships, there are not that many cars on those ships. So I wouldn't expect, like, normally you can sometimes see like a 3x increase over the third month of the quarter. If they can match the last 2 months in June, I would be happily surprised, which would put the number of European deliveries at around 10,000 units. So nothing crazy. Maybe a few other markets could help, like Korea or Australia and those places. But right now, it's really China making the difference. So China and whatever is going to happen in the U.S. and North America. Like I said, standing at around 50,000 right now, apparently, with maybe a 10,000 more possible. 10,000 more would be 60,000. Add China, that's 90,000. Then Europe, 95 to 100. That seems a little bit crazy. That's on the optimist side, in my opinion. But it looks like 90,000 is very much achievable at this point, which would be pretty cool.
Yeah, especially in this quarter.
Yeah, so since we posted that article yesterday, a bunch of, I think, Gitoro here in the comments pointed it out, a bunch of Wall Street analysts have upgraded their own delivery estimates, which before that stood at between $60,000 and $70,000 units, depending on who you ask. But now it seems to be going closer to 70,000 total, and some analysts that are more optimistic are putting 80,000 units. So I think Tesla would still deliver a beat even with those consensus increase, which is interesting to look at. Oh yeah, do you believe 90,000 is achievable, Seth, or is it too optimistic?
I think 90,000 would be achievable. Yeah. Again, like everybody who can get their hands on a Model Y right now, we'll take a Model Y. I think if Tesla had unlimited supply, they could probably sell 250,000 Model Ys. Mm-hmm. So, it's just a matter of building them. And it sounds like, Tesla was very aggressive in getting their, employees back into building them. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. And, but so, okay. So the delivery, one of the good outcome might be that, delivery record or like around it, like good delivery, but a lot of people are also speculating that it might be a profit, an actual profit in Q2. And the idea behind that and why Elon was so cryptic on the email, it might be that if Tesla does deliver a profit, it would comply to all the requirements to be included in an S&P 500. And a lot of Tesla investors are putting a lot of weight into that. I don't know if I would myself. I mean, historically, yes, companies do see a little boost after they are included in S&P because some index fund and whatnot, they buy up so to account for them in their tracking of the S&P. But it's not what it used to be, I think. It's not that major. But yeah, if they have a profit again this quarter, even if it's just like a cent of profit, they could technically be included in S&P 500.
I think they're going to make a profit. I think there's enough wiggle room in the books that even if they don't make a profit officially, and the S&P, I'm sure they take generally accepted accounting rules. Mm-hmm. They don't do the non-GAAP accounting.
Yeah,
I still think there's probably room enough. I just don't think it'll be a big profit.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, well, sure. I agree. That's, if it is a profit, it won't be big. I mean, I find it hard to believe that it's achievable, especially since Tesla is definitely going to take a beating on their gross margin this quarter with the price cuts across the board, like $2,000 for each Model 3, which Model 3 would still account for the majority of cars sold this quarter. Then Model S and X, $5,000 price cut, massive. So I think that will definitely hurt their gross margins. And, but also Model Y, probably, even though they said it was already positive last quarter, I mean, maybe it will still be positive this quarter because like with the production ramp up, I think Tesla delivered like just a few thousand last quarter, and this quarter is going to be probably over 10,000 Model Y delivered. With the qualities issues that we've been seeing and all the rectification that Elon mentioned in the previous email that we reported on, I would assume that the gross margin wouldn't be very good on Model Y either. So yeah, that hurts. However, like we've been talking about the FSD package, a lot of people are probably buying that right now because of the price increase that's coming next month. Then some other upgrades via the app, that's probably also going to help Tesla's profit. And we've been talking about Tesla probably recognizing more profit for the FSD package that they previously sold because of the new traffic lights and stop sign control feature. It's so it's so hard to determine, like, okay, what percentage now they can recognize as revenue from that. But let's say even if they go from like 50% to 60% recognition, that's still with all the sales that they have, that could be like over $100 million. And if they were planning to have $100 million loss, but you just turn that loss into like going even, or I mean, I'm sure they can find that 1 cent that turned them into a profit too. So not impossible. That's what I'm saying. But I wouldn't bet on it personally. All right. We also learned a little bit more about the Roadrunner secret project that we exclusively reported earlier this year. Tesla, as far as I know, for the first time, publicly acknowledged the project, at least with this code name, Roadrunner, through an application with the city of Fremont regarding an expansion of the facility where the pilot production line is currently set up. It's at their facility down the road from the factory on Cato Road. And basically what the application is for is, the most interesting part of it is that they acknowledge the battery manufacturing facility is there, and they call it the Terra Battery Manufacturing Facility. which I would assume is related to terawatt hour capacity production. I'm not saying that the specific facility is a terawatt hour production, but it's the pilot production line is what will eventually enable, if you deploy many of them, the terawatt hour capacity volume battery cell production. And they said that this facility is under the Roadrunner project, which, as we previously reported, is about all the equipment that Tesla is building to manufacture their own cells. And yeah, the application is for increasing the capacity of the building with almost 30,000 square feet more. So nothing massive, but it would basically add a floor to the building or a mezzanine, so that they can increase the production capacity of the Roadrunner project there. And we don't know the actual production capacity, but I would have to assume that it's pretty significant for an R&D operation, because they're talking about running it 24/7, 365 days a year with four ships of up to 100 workers each. So at all time, you'd have 100 workers working on that production line. That's significant, really.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising, because we kind of operate under the assumption that Fremont is totally full. And
well, this is not the same facility as that.
That's
Fremont,
right. It's factory.
It's like a mile down the road. But yeah, I mean, still, all Tesla's buildings in Fremont are definitely really busy. That's why they're not building a new building here. They are literally like building a mezzanine, a very large mezzanine to put more equipment. So yeah, it is pretty much full. They were just like looking up in the air. It's like, you know what? There's nothing in the air here. Let's put something there.
Yeah, there's a lot of free space here.
But that was a big team in when Tesla was designing Gigafactory 1. They keep talking about the production volume per, it's cubic feet, really. They were instead of looking at a footage, like a square footage, they were looking at a cubic feet. Like they were looking like, we need to fill up these room floor to ceiling, not just like equipment on the floor. So Tesla has definitely been thinking about that for a while. They're also asking PG&E to increase the electricity power at the plant. So they're going to need a lot more power to power that equipment for the. And again, that's what the interesting part. The technology, battery manufacturing equipment, and under parentheses, Roadrunner. So really nice that they're acknowledging that for the first time. The application also mentioned a bunch of materials that's going to be used in the production that the extension of the plant is going to enable. And unsurprisingly, it's all battery cell material, like aluminum, cobalt, nickel oxide.
Basically a list of things that go into batteries.
Yeah. And they're talking both about NCM, NCA precursor, and manganese is also in there and everything. Yeah, if you want to get into the nitty gritty, you can check out the full building application on Electrek, but we really reported on the highlights here. We should know more definitely at Battery Day. And last weekend, after our last podcast episode, Elon gave us a tentative date for the Battery Day. And also now it's going to be the shareholders meeting too, for September 15.
Which are late on both.
Yeah, late on both. And a lot late too. Like originally it was supposed to happen like early in the year. So that didn't happen. Then it was supposed to happen around all the COVID thing that happened. So, okay, fair enough. We can give them a break on that. But then it went on June and then July. And now they went from July to September. So apparently it's because Elon really wants people to be there. In the case of the shareholder meeting, I think, do you have to have people there for the shareholder meeting now that COVID? Normally you do. Normally, like, every shareholder is welcome. They have to welcome them.
Right.
But I don't know if they can change that with the...
I'm not sure either.
Yeah. Because that's a weird situation. If you have to welcome every shareholders that you can, but you are restricted in how many people can attend an event right now in California or virtually everywhere, no one can really hold a shareholder. Maybe I should look into that. Is our other companies holding shareholder meeting, and are they accepting people there?
I don't think so. Also, no. I don't know for sure that September is going to look any better than right now.
Well, even if it doesn't look much better, I think some states are going to start reopening to events and everything either way, based on the trend that we're seeing right now. But anyway, and also he said that Tesla will give tour of the battery cell manufacturing that Tesla is doing right now. So it's definitely going to happen in Fremont because of that at the Terra battery manufacturing facility. So it'd be interesting. I mean, if I'm in the U.S. at that point, I'll definitely go check it out. I'm going to make use of my Tesla shares. Yep. Even though Tesla doesn't like inviting me at events anymore, I think they would technically be forced to let me in if I show that I have shares. Another little update this week. Model S and Model S supercharging rate increasing to 225 kilowatts. So previously it was 200, so another bump. Not quite the 250 that the Model 3 is getting when it's using supercharger V3, but still like getting pretty close now.
And so you have to use the V3 to get the 225, right?
Yeah, I think it's everything caps at 160 now for the non-V3, the V2.
Gotcha.
So there's it's not on the car side. It's on the bottleneck is on the supercharger side also. But yeah, what's more confusing right now is so Tesla enabled that through a software update. So if you have the 220.24.6 and you have a Model S and X, make sure that if you see if that's in the supercharger improvement to 225 is in the release notes, because it's really not clear which car are getting that update or are getting that new capacity in that update. Because I mean, we talked a lot about the long range plus improvement Tesla has made and everything, but that was enabled through a bunch of hardware improvement over the last year. So it's nice that's right. That's the advantage and disadvantage of Tesla's not respecting the model year model and going with the incremental improvement whenever they can introduce them. Is that it creates some confusion like that way? Okay, which car are getting this update or not? I it looks so far like it's very the most recent one, so the one made since like February. But I got an owner reporting earlier this week that 2017 Model X, and it got like 184 kilowatt at the supercharger station. Which normally those cars didn't get that, so looks like improvements all around. Also, they started updating the range display with that update, but this one I'm a little more skeptical about because Tesla kept saying that the range, they're not really increasing the range, they're not increasing efficiency, it's just they are increasing the range that is displayed to more appropriately reflect the actual range of the car. So, I mean, we've been saying it for a while, the range is only a number, really, like it all depends on how you drive the car, what wheels are on and everything, but doesn't sound like they improved the efficiency here. They're just trying to more correctly represent the range, and apparently that's by increasing it. But I don't think everyone will appreciate that update, because if you drive more aggressively or anything like that, maybe you were getting closer to the actual range previously, and now you won't anymore. It'll be interesting to have one of reports on that. But yeah. And next up, I saw the Cybertruck in person for the first time. I know, Seth, you did at the launch, but I wasn't there at the launch last year.
What'd you think?
I liked it a lot. I appreciate the design a lot more than all that I've seen it in person. It is big, but yeah, not as big as I thought it looked on the picture that I saw before. Like, it's a little bit taller than me, but only at the very peak of the of the car here, because of the like strange like triangle design of it, it's only like tall at the very peak. The rest is not that tall, so it looks imposing, but it doesn't feel that big. But yeah, I really liked it. Like, I also, one of the things that was fascinating with was the tires and the wheels. like in the picture, they look like some one big contraption, really. Like you couldn't like differentiate really the tire with the wheels. But now getting a close look at them, you can clearly see that it's a wheel cap, basically.
Yeah, just a big hubcap.
Yeah, and it's sort of looks like it's almost like going over the tire a little bit, which probably what's made that effect is that it looks like one big piece in some pictures. But like here in this picture here, you can really see the demarcation here between the actual wheel and tire.
It's interesting how the grooves are in the tire for where that thing goes.
Yeah, it looks like it's definitely a custom-made tire, a good year for Tesla. Yeah, I really appreciated the design in person. I thought it was...
Did they let you touch it or anything? Or how?
No. You see here, there's a little around here. That's gotcha. It's real tough, so you couldn't really see the interior either. The Volt, I like the Volt cover a lot. I think it looks neat. Looks really well done. A few things I didn't like are the panel. First of all, I think this was probably the best way to look at the Cybertruck. Like Tesla's unveiling, it's always dark and everything. Like, this is one of the best occasions to see it at the Peterson Museum, that is, because you have great lighting, basically. But at the same time, the lighting is coming from uniformly from everywhere, so it's not like how you would see it outside, for example. And I was you're a little bit confused when you walk around the car, because the body panels, because they are so sharp, they all look like they are different level of shininess, like they've been polished differently. Mm-hmm. But it's really the way that the lights hit on them, because they're so sharp angles that it doesn't flow very well, so you can see like clear demarcation between every panel. And that can look weird a little bit. And like one looks like a mirror and the other one looks almost like matte black, matte silver or something. But yeah, you can even see like the cameras on it, because you can get that close. Do I have a picture of that? I'm not sure I shared a picture. Oh yeah, right here. You see the camera? Oh, they are embedded in the wheel covers on the sides. And for a prototype also too, I felt like it looked pretty good. Like it looked really refined. There was only like a few small things that looked like they weren't like production ready. But of course, aside from the fact that this is going to have to change a few things for sure to be legal. But the charge port stood out a lot to me. Like that doesn't look right, really, because I mean, if you look at all other Tesla vehicles, they always embed the charge port into the taillights, really, or like some kind of trims around the taillights. So it's kind of hidden. But this one, of course, the taillights are like so weird. They are like indented between the bumper and the body panel. So there's no putting a charge port there. So it really stands out. It reminds me of like the Model S and X in China. When they added the Chinese standard charge port, it really stands out like that.
I know the audience there was probably skewed in towards Tesla fans, but like, what was the general consensus there? Were people like, "Oh, this looks beautiful," or "This is horrible," or somewhere in between?
Well, I went there with a bunch of electric readers. I bought a bunch of tickets and gave it out to a few people, and most people liked it there. Only like, yeah, we were, how many were it? Seven of us, and I think one of us didn't like it.
Oh, so really?
Yeah, but most people seem to appreciate the design of it. I mean, obviously it's gonna be it's not a usual design. I think it's gonna just take time for polarizing. But the ones, like, there's literally just one of them right now. It's just that prototype. So once more of them are on the road, people, I think, will get used to it a little bit more and start appreciating the design a little bit. But yeah, I mean, also, I see someone ask how tall I am, because compared to the truck, I'm 6 foot tall. So I think the truck at the very peak is probably like 6'2", 6'3", something like that. But then it sharply goes down. So that's like normally a roof of a pickup truck is flat almost. So if it is a tall truck, then it's tall all the way through. And I think the Cybertruck is similar in height as other trucks, but again, just at the peak. I could see the interior a little bit. Did you realize that the screen in the Cybertruck prototype wasn't the same as the Model 3 when you got in?
Was the same or was not the same?
Not the same.
Yeah.
Look, at least it looks to me like it's not the same. It looks more like the new iPad, like all the corner rounded, but the more square on the sides.
Yeah, and they also had like a marble. I don't know if you can tell from that picture, but like the dashboard's marble-ish looking.
Yeah, just looks white on the picture, but might be because I'm taking a picture through the window there.
Yeah, and it's all, I mean, you see the sharp edges. Like, that can't be, like, if it's a hard surface, that's got to be kind of a bad surface to have on the inside, you know, if you hit that with your head.
Well, I don't think it's real marble.
I hope not. But even if it's like a hard plastic or something, it seems like it'd be kind of dangerous.
Well, you're not supposed to hit it, of course, because the airbag is supposed to pop up. But then that brings up the fact that on the prototype, you still had the steering wheel with the open top on it. Right. And that's apparently an issue with the airbag, like the way that the airbag pops up without the top of it. But I don't know what Tesla plans to get around that with the production. I know that engineers at the launch were all saying, like, no, this is what's supposed to be in production, but it's unclear how Tesla can deliver that within the current regulations.
So did you try to throw anything at the windows?
No, but I came with my...
I saw the shirt.
I cannot click on it there. It prompts me to another one. But yeah, you can see I had my Cybertruck shirt and with the broken glass. No, I recommend it. Well, I don't actually. I think today was the no. Tomorrow was the last day that.
I think they extended it.
Oh yeah,
week. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, you have to get tickets. You cannot just show up at the museum. You have to get tickets. So I think the first week was almost sold out after we posted about it. So if they extended it, then check out more tickets because it's really fun. And I mean, the whole exposition there is a lot of great cars to look at. The original Model S prototype is there. I know, Seth, you're a big fan of that car.
Oh, yeah. I will have that one day.
Maybe. You will have that?
Probably not.
You can try to steal it from the museum, Brent, maybe.
No, I think Kimball Musk said he's driving around a prototype or something. So maybe there's a few around.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know, yeah. There might be one on one. You're right. Yeah, because there was also a gray one when they did test drive first. And so that's the one that they have in the museum. I think it's the one that Tesla had at their factory where they were exposing it. And maybe they just loaned it to the museum. But yeah, I agree. I like the front end of it too. Like the front end looks cool. It was the first time I saw the interior of it though. And it's the thing that's, aside from the front end, it's the thing that's most different from the actual Model S that they delivered a few years later. Because that prototype is back from 2009, so you have to keep in mind that like Tesla normally tries to deliver vehicles very close to the prototypes that they unveil, but normally the cycle, at least nowadays, like for the Model Y and now the Cybertruck and everything, it's a lot quicker cycle. For Model S, it wasn't quite it, because 2009, the...
It's quite a ways away from
production. Yeah, 2009, they reveal the prototype, and the first car were delivered in late 2012. So
also important to remember, you know, up until that point, Tesla had only made the Roadster, and the Roadster has almost no like technology, like passenger facing technology. Yeah. It's basically like a LCD screen about 3 inches wide or something.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's a huge, like they went from like one of the worst displays I've ever seen to like one of the best displays.
And I think even the early Roadster had two displays. They had like a regular like media unit, like just like that you find, like you can buy almost like aftermarket and just swipe into a car. And then they had like a tiny display that was about like it was sort of tiny UI for like the battery pack information and things like
that. Right. That's, you remember when we had that convertible Roadster?
Yeah.
That's what I remember from that. That was,
yeah, that was my first time in California, I remember. First time I come to California, we go to Tesla's factory and we get to drive the Roadster around the 3.0. You remember? How was the Roadster 3.0?
That was fun.
Yeah. Next, well, still on the Cybertruck, some estimates now are placing the total pre-orders at 650,000 units. So whether you like it or not, a lot of people are liking it.
I mean, Tesla's got $65 million of reservation money.
6.5. Yeah, you're right. Which is actually not a lot for Tesla. No, but... sometimes they get like hundreds of millions of dollars
right.
On much fewer reservations. So yeah, because it's just $100 deposit, it's not as big of a show of interest in the truck, but still, I mean, and it shows like a continued interest in the truck, because like it's been not quite a year yet, but like 7 months or something like that now since the unveiling. And within the first week, they got 250,000 reservation. But then normally it just it goes down pretty quick. But we reported on that before too. Apparently, like a lot of people, it was such a big hit in term, not necessarily like, again, it was polarizing, so people like it or not. But in term of its reach, it was so impactful that a lot of people still like are learning about Tesla through the Cybertruck, which is interesting. And even like generating sales. But yeah, Wedbush analyst Dan Hives had his own survey and put it at 650,000 Cybertrucks.
I wonder if Jay Leno's garage encouraged anybody to
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how popular that episode was. I didn't check it after.
But I think it's a different demographic than the typical Tesla.
Fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. You had an interesting post yesterday. You talked a little bit about it, that you were working on that last podcast.
Yep.
But now you posted it, and I recommend everyone to go check it out, because it really is a good review, like long-term review of not just the Bolt EV itself, but through the you get a look at GM's state in the EV market right now through the eyes of a long-time Bolt EV owner, basically. Is that fair?
Yeah, and thanks. Owning a Bolt EV has been kind of a crazy experience, because, you know, at the time, it was the first not expensive long range EV. And at the time, like, GM was really behind it. It seemed like they had a program together. Like, I got a 3-year lease, thinking in 3 years they're going to have a much better one, you know, much, you know, faster, bigger, whatever, all wheel drive, hopefully. Obviously, none of that came to fruition. Even looking out a year or two ahead of us, I don't think anything like that's coming out. We're going to see a Cadillac in the coming, what is that, in a month from now? The Cadillac Lyric. But
August, first week of August, I think.
Yeah, so we're going to see it, but we're not going to be able to buy it for a long time after that. So it was kind of the whole time, it was kind of like, wow, GM hasn't really done anything. Here comes the 2018 one. No, nothing upgraded on the Bolt. 2019, nothing. 2020, there's some updates, but they're almost negligible. I mean, the big update was this extra 6 kWh of battery. But I almost feel like LG did that anyway. Like, LG was just building better battery cells because they weren't, and they were like, look, we don't have any of the old battery cells.
They were forced to get that update.
Yeah. They like literally, Chevy would not have done the update if LG hadn't kind of said, well, look, we don't have any shitty batteries anymore. We have these better batteries and that's all we have. It just felt like that. And then, you know, obviously there was like a skeleton crew, it felt like, Bolt people on board, kind of, you know, not doing much of anything. I think, you know, I was talking to at some of the media events, I was talking to some of the other journalists. I think GM Authority, those guys go kind of deep. You know, they're in Detroit, they know all the politics and the that kind of stuff. And it sounds like Pam Fletcher was who kind of led the Volt. And then the Bolt after that was kind of forced out of the program. And at some point, it was decided that this was kind of a dead end. And, you know, they have the Bolt EUV coming out in the last half of 2021, 2022. Mm-hmm. But really, the platform is a dead end. They're going to their new, what is it, Itanium?
Ultimum?
Yeah, I'm getting it mixed up with that old Intel chip. But their own modular battery system. And that's going to, I think that's going to be in the Lyric first. And that's their next generation platform. It's going to charge at a high speed and it's going to do all these things, but like the Bolt kind of just got left, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's really unfortunate, because you talk to any Bolt driver and they're like, hey, I kind of like my car. It's really awesome. And you know, if they had given me any kind of reasonable offer at the end of the lease, I would have taken it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I haven't bought anything else. I'm probably going to be riding e-bikes around most of the summer. Obviously, I have the Tesla, but it's just so frustrating that a company that, you know, some engineers, and LG probably had a big part of that as well, but some engineers built this great product. It does like what a car should do. It gets plenty of range. The one problem is, you know, in terms of range, is the charging speed is only 54 kilowatts. And my God, they didn't change that any time during my, you know, the lifetime. They didn't upgrade that at all. And they're not going to upgrade that even at the Bolt EV in 2 years. So like, it's just so frustrating, because I know that, you know, there's some guy, and I mentioned this in the story, there's some guy behind a desk, and it's going to cost, you know, like X amount of dollars to upgrade this thing to 100 kilowatts. And he's like, no, we're not going to do that. Sorry. And like, that kind of decision making is just really like turns the Bolt into a very specific, almost compliancy type of situation. So it's a great car. The Bolt is a great car. People buying the Bolt now, especially, you know, we have a sale, a low price guide under autos section in the Electrek site. People are getting it for like $25,000 now, which is pretty close to what they were offering me as a buyout price. Obviously, I wasn't going to buy out a 3-year-old car for the same price as a new one, but
they were offering you $25,000
to buy it out.
$25,000 for a 3-year-old Bolt EV.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, that was the original buyout price, because so the reason, the way they set it up,
no one was going to buy it. Like, it's just going to sit on their inventory.
They sell it to an auction. They told me they sell it to an auction house. They're probably going to get like 12 or 13,000 for it, and then they're going to write it down. But it's, you know, obviously super frustrating, because like I could.
How much would you have paid? Like 15,000?
I think 15. I probably would have done. I mean, I didn't even use all the miles. It, you know, I had 30,000 miles to burn on it for 3 years, and I only did like 23,000. So I had less than 7,000 miles, or I could have burned 7,000 more miles. And, you know, like the plates, the insurance, like all that stuff didn't have to.
Part of why you didn't get all that mileage too, it's because the fact that it's doesn't allow faster charging, and you couldn't use it for longer distance trips.
Yeah, it's quite frustrating, because we would have used it on longer trips, because it's really, you know, a nice car. The other things, like a lot of people complain about the seats. I didn't really care. Like, it wasn't a big stress. You rode it in the Bolt. What did you think of the seats?
Yeah, I had the Bolt for a week, and I like everything about it. I mean, I'm not crazy about the design of it. I think they could have made something better. I think they went a little bit too much. It's not like a early Leaf or anything like that, but I think they still, it was still back in the days where there was this tension to make a car electric in terms of design that I don't think you need to. But my biggest thing with the Bolt EV, my biggest complaint was always the fact that, okay, now $25,000 with the big discounts, it's something else. But when it was like 30, 35, even like 40, depending on the model, I just don't, the interior especially just looked too plasticky to me. It didn't look like a $30,000 to $40,000 car to me.
Right. No, and that's true, especially the interior, man. It really felt not great. And then I'm not sure, did you also have the problem with the tires spinning a lot?
No, I don't remember having that problem.
It's like if you're on gravel or wet roads or whatever, it was a significant issue, or snow, obviously, but on regular streets.
Yeah, I have that with a lot of EVs, just that have smaller tires and they are like quite powerful, despite not being like, I mean, not that they're quite powerful, but they have like torque, a lot of torque on it.
Yeah. So anyway, it's just like my point was, GM's got a bunch of new EVs coming down the pike. They need to like kind of figure out their brand image. They're like, do they care about EV drivers? Do they want this whole package? Are they going to let their dealers, who clearly don't have any interest in selling EVs, be the point persons on the relationship with their customers with EVs? And, you know, it's kind of a wake-up call, hopefully, for them. Sorry. So hopefully they respond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it doesn't look good.
No. And my, you know, the probably the most frustrating thing for me is this whole like siding with the Trump administration on their, you know, Mary Barra gets so much like pushback from Trump on so many things. It's impossible for me to understand why they decided to go with the Trump administration on
that. Against the California, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of Mr. Trump, apparently, our next story is about a car that he designed and built with his own two hands. At least that's almost what it sounded like during that presentation. Did you watch that presentation?
I didn't.
Good for you. Good for you. Because I watched the whole thing and wasn't great. Wasn't a great presentation, to be honest. First of all, like, we're talking about the Lordstown Endurance here, which is, of course, the company that sort of spun out of Workhorse that we reported on them before. They do those electric vans and those plug-in hybrid pickups. And they basically had a deal with GM to buy back the Lordstown factory that they were shutting down and to convert it into a factory to produce their electric pickup truck, full electric pickup truck, unlike the plug-in hybrid of Workhorse. And Steve Burns is behind that company, and Steve Burns was the co-founder or CEO, or at least he was behind Workhorse before that. But the deal is very political because Trump, when GM announced closing the factory, Trump got involved. And I mean, as far as we know, he just tweeted a bunch of things about it, but at the unveiling of the truck, Mike Pence was there. And I mean, I have whether you like Trump or not, this is not the point here, but Mike Pence's speech basically made it sound like Donald Trump like made that car happen. Like he was all in and everything. It was kind of nuts, really.
And, sounds very North Korea.
Yeah, almost. Yeah, 18 O's in one in a row. It almost sounded like that. But yeah, I mean, it may be out of hand in the deal happening and everything, but it was strange to me. We already knew a lot about the endurance too, so that's why the presentation wasn't that interesting, because previously they only had renders, but they also had all the specs for the truck. Now it was just like really unveiling a working prototype. So Pence actually drove the truck on stage to show that it was a working prototype. And now we see like the final design of it before it goes into production. Close to the renders they previously unveiled, but I have to say I'm not a big fan of that, of those large black lines on that truck. Especially if you look at the rear quarter panel here, or the rear quarter view, I mean. Like maybe okay, the big line at the bottom that goes up here, but this one here looks just weird to me. It's just strange. It just frames these doors, and these doors have no lines in there whatsoever. Like just a tiny little curvature, and you just frame that boring part of the truck here. Literally, it's one of the most boring body panels I've ever seen, and those big lines like frame them. It's strange.
It's a weird, weird looking vehicle.
But yeah, I already reported on the stats on them. They wanted to start at $52,000, kind of an attractive price there. Talking about a range of 250 plus miles on the EPA cycle.
Good.
Sorry?
That's good.
Yeah.
For a truck?
Decent. The big highlight, and Steve Burns referred to it at Lordstown Motors, innovation aspect on the truck is having four hub motors on that truck, which I think would make it probably the first electric vehicle, larger electric passenger vehicle with hub motors. I mean, that's interesting in itself. Like it is a first, a new thing, but it's also kind of worrying a little bit because there's a big reason why it's not popular. Like hub motors are not new themselves. Like they've been around forever, but people just don't use them in large, like they're popular with bikes, e-bikes, electric scooters and all that, because lighter electric vehicles, more maneuverable and everything, but bigger, heavier vehicles, it's an issue because the weak points are the wheels. Like that's what breaks a lot. That's what ran into puddles and everything. And you put some very fancy piece of equipment in there, which is the electric motor. So they said that their hub motors are super robust, which I mean, everybody would say that anyway. But I think that truck's going to need a lot of testing to make sure that those motors are reliable for over a long period of time and everything. And that's why, I mean, I'm a little bit concerned about the timeline you're talking about. Of course, they keep saying that they're going to be the first electric pickup truck to market. And at first, it was supposed to be by the end of this year. Then the last month or 2 months ago, they pushed that to 2021. But they're talking about like early 2021 because they still want to be the first to market. Rivian was supposed to be the first to market for a while, but they also pushed it to 2021. They haven't updated exactly the timeline in 2021, but it looks like at least if Endurance, Lordstown Motors, keep their timeline for the Endurance, they could still be. But I have my doubts because during the presentation, they also gave a tour of the factory and, it didn't look like they put a lot of work in it. Like it looked like a completely abandoned building. Like it's a giant factory, of course, like 6 million square foot or something like that. But there's going to be a lot of work to get that thing back running and adapted for a brand new vehicle. Like I don't even think it was producing pickup trucks there, if I'm not mistaken, before. I think it was producing like crews or something like that. Like,
yeah.
So yeah, it's a lot of work. But I think apparently they have 14,000 pre-orders already, and they are like I'm bitching about the design here, but they are aiming for the fleet market. They want workers actually to use that, and cities to buy them, and construction companies and everything. So I guess for that front, it's not that bad. But at the same time, they have like it's 250 miles of range and towing capacity of 7,500. So it's not like a top of the line workhorse pickup truck either. Like it's we'll see. We're gonna still keep an eye on them, and we wish them as much success as possible, but I'm a bit skeptical at this point. All right, the DOE, the Department of Energy, released a very interesting, like, in-depth study this week into EV charging costs compared to gas. And it's a very fun study, very comprehensive, because they really dive deep into like the mix of when you where you charge your car. So like residential at 81%, workplace at 14%, public fast charging at 5%, and they put a bunch of different option based on the cost, because of course the more you're gonna DC fast charge, the more expensive it's gonna be. Versus charging at home, unless you have one of those Teslas on unlimited supercharging, then it's actually cheaper to use the supercharger. But they try to, depending on all those type of options, just how much you can save with an electric car. And in the best case scenario, which I think is higher level of residential charging, you can save between 6,000 and 14,000, depending on the state you are, because of course that will affect the electricity rates and the gas pricing. But overall, it looks, I think, mostly positive, you'd say. Like it's also, that's over, that's not annually, of course. It's over the lifetime, I think, of the car. What did they say? They give you, yeah, over the lifetime. They didn't give it an actual period of time, but I would assume probably 10 years, 15 years on that. Next one, Ford dealers. And if you guys have questions, please put them in the comment section on the right side right now, and we'll get to them after this article. But we reported earlier this week on Ford dealers marking up the Mustang Mach-E as much as $15,000. So this is more like a public service announcement than anything. And that, by that I mean like, do not accept any pricing like that.
Right.
Apparently, Ford has some decent demand for the car, especially the first edition that's gonna come first. Like it's sold out, but the way it's set up, because like they try to do like the Tesla model of like unveiling the vehicle, taking reservation, even though it's not coming out for a year after the unveiling. But then, unlike Tesla, then once they have those reservations, they basically have to send them to their local dealership of those people, and then those people have to come to term. I mean, we heard those markups, we reached out to Ford, and Ford told us that ultimately customers and dealers agree on the final pricing, and you have to do that. And some dealers were asking like $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $10,000, and even $15,000 markup for reservation holders, but Again, you don't have to accept that. A lot of people will not mark. A lot of dealers will not mark up. I think all dealers that are within Ford, Ford as a, like an electric dealer program. So if the dealers went through that program, then they don't they accepted not to mark up the car, so they're gonna sell it at MSRP or even with. I mean, it's so weird with Ford has those what do you call AZXD plan, like where they're depending on the kind of relation you have with Ford, whether it's like your family members, an employee, right, or a neighbor or whatever, like they have different programs for that, which is so strange. But anyway, we link to a list in the article that you can check out to some forum members on the Mackie forums. They put a list together of all the dealers that are not charging any markup. So even if you have to drive out a little bit further out to get the car, you definitely should, because you don't want to encourage any dealers marking up the cars like that.
Yeah, I remember I had with the Chevy Bolt, I had to haggle with the guy for 2 days just to get the list price. And
just to get the manufacturer recommended price.
Right.
And you know that some people now are getting it for under the MSRP. So
quite a bit.
So it's not like they actually have some people will come in, pay a price, and some other people will come in and pay another price. It just makes no sense. But yeah, so don't do that.
Don't do that.
All right, let's go into the questions before we go.
All right. Got quite a few. We kind of talked about Jitoro earlier, but we think that possibly your story may have shifted analyst expectations up a little bit. I'm sure you'll get a big check from those analysts in the coming days after that. Oh, yeah, we didn't talk about this. California has a new electric semi-truck.
Not just semi-trucks, all the way down from Class 2Bs, which are like the bigger pickup trucks. Actually, the Cybertruck would technically fit in that category because of the capacity it has, all the way to semi-truck. Yeah, I mean, it is groundbreaking in the sense that it never happened before. California, like its EV mandate for passenger electric cars, is going to require progressively a truck manufacturer to deliver more electric trucks. However, I don't think it's aggressive enough at all. It starts in 2024, and they want to be all electric, all new trucks electric by 2045. Problem is like next year there's going to be a bunch of trucks that's going to fit that description. I mean, all the way from the Cybertruck to the Tesla Semi and competitors also. So I just... Those trucks, even if maybe not the first year, maybe not the second year, but let's say the third year, which is actually when the program starts in 2024, those trucks are going to be at that point so much better than gasoline and diesel counterpart, especially on the Tesla Semi front and all the electric Semi truck. They're going to make so much more sense just on the operating cost that it would make no sense to not buy it if you need a new truck for fleet operators. Because forget about the not liking the Cybertruck design or anything like that, or the Tesla Semi design. The fleet operators, they don't care about the design. They care about, like, is it going to save me money? Is it going to increase my gross margin or not? And it looks like the Tesla Semi right now, it's the best truck to buy in terms of cost. When you amortize the cost of the truck, because it's a little bit more expensive, but into the cost of operation, it is cheaper than anything else. So once everybody knows that, when it's clear, everyone's going to want to buy that. So it's not going to be in question of demand. It's going to be a question of supply, like who's going to be able to build them enough. So I think that shift is going to happen within the next 5 years max. So probably before like 2025, 2026, every fleet operator in their right mind will be like, we need to buy Tesla Semi or a competitor, electric competitor. So to think that, oh, by 2024, by 2045, I want every manufacturer, every new trucks sold in California to be electric is like, what does that even mean?
Right. But, you know, I guess the one upside is like they're sending a message out to everybody saying, yeah, look, this is the future.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, let's go on. Johnny B, although Elon appears not to be concerned about stock price, S&P listing would add to Tesla's credibility.
Yeah, but at this point, it's like a $170 billion company. So whether it's on the S&P or not. Like...
Yeah, I think I remember when Apple got into the, I think, Dow Jones, I think there was an artificial spike in their price. So
yeah.
What do we say here? This is a good question, Fred. How do you beat all the other journalists consistently to these Tesla stories? How?
No sleep.
There you go.
Working all the time.
Those basically. Other guys do not, they do not stay up enough.
If you want to beat other people, and that's Elon's playbook too, is work ethic. That's going to be the number one thing.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously Elon makes a lot of decisions at 3 a.m., so you got to be up for that. Do you think that the Model X and 3 will be discontinued when the Y is ramped up? Probably not, but I have a feeling a lot more resources are going to Model Y right now.
Yeah, I mean, I know what he means by that, but it kind of fits right in between the X and 3.
Right.
But the 3 is still an extremely popular vehicle right now. I think the X is going to be updated to have a bigger differentiation that is not just the size with Model Y. So no, I think the both programs are going to stay for a while.
X will need a longer range. And so also Brian kind of agrees with you that smaller battery. All right, Johnny B, I don't think any models will be discontinued until they fail to make money. All right, we're having a conversation here. All right, Rodrigo Alman says third European recovery, new credits, EV and incentives, Germany, France, and new plan in Spain, Model 3 SR, maybe great success.
Yeah, we saw a lot of European markets, including electric vehicles in their stimulus package following the pandemic. So yeah, I think a lot of EVs are going to benefit from that for sure. Not just the Model 3, but...
All right, so Joel is asking, how many megawatts hours per year do you think the Kato line will produce? And in the article, Fred mentioned 5 to 6 digit kilowatt hours. Any moles giving you numbers?
No. That's pure speculation from me.
All right, so more conversation. The 3 and X are quite complex and thus expensive to build, and the Cybertruck coming. Are people really going to be buying an X? I think so. I think the doors particularly are exciting for a lot of people. I know I was just talking to a colleague of ours about getting rid of his Model X, and it's kind of like his dream car. So a lot of people are in that boat.
Is it Michael? Michael wants to get rid of his Model X?
Well, we were talking about it.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was just like, hey, I'm getting rid of my Model X, and I'm getting a Model Y, and I'm excited about that. And that kind of, you know, the conversation kind of grew from there. Like, well, why do you want to do that? Why don't you want to do that? All right. When will Tesla be able to do not only high production numbers, but quality too? So many articles are being published about the JD Power Quality Index. It is not good look for Tesla.
I mean, the Model 3 has improved a lot for sure. So, but at the same time, I don't think the JD Power numbers included Model Y at this point.
Yeah, it's kind of a dichotomy because, you know, if you look at Consumer Reports customer satisfaction, Tesla's number one. So
yeah, because a lot of Tesla customers overlook some of the issues for sure. Because I think that the index, the JD Power listing specifically just ranked them by the number of issues per car on average. And Tesla was like 2.5 bigger than most. So they got the bottom of the list. Some people like brought the point that they fudged the number because the Tesla doesn't allow people to reach out to customers in most states. So the like in California, for example. But I still think they had a big data sample to work with here. So I'm not sure if that had a big impact. Like, we know Tesla's quality issues. Like, it's not like new information here. So I don't know. Like, people are so competitive about the JD Power thing.
All right. So strangely enough, nobody is talking about Mercedes and Audis just being above Tesla in that report. And I also remember a few like kind of not great brands being at the top. Mm-hmm. So
No.
Interesting report.
Yeah, a lot of people are like, what, Dodge at the top?
Right.
Like, well,
maybe, you know, maybe they got that backwards or something.
Yeah.
They read their results wrong. Shannon Dorr says, I think old Model X will still have demand.
Yeah.
Michael Valicella, I think the delay has more to do with them getting the battery line new cell ready and in packs for the S and X to avoid the Osborne effect. Just like they did at Autonomy Day. I agree that that's a good thing to do.
Yeah, well, for sure. The longer it's pushed, the better it's going to be, for sure. The more far along they're going to be in the Roadrunner project. But that's an interesting point that he brings up about the batteries going into the S and X packs. I just talked to Galileo Russell yesterday, and we were talking about that, like trying to figure out, because it looks like they have these lines, so Tesla's going to put those cells somewhere, and we were speculating on what they would put them. And SNX was our especially the Plaid SNX, most likely a Vico program to get the cells first, I think.
Brian McNeil says, agreed on the quality issues, not having a dealer that normally fixes a lot of those things before getting to the consumer. That's a good question. Like, why is this making it all the way to the consumer?
Yeah.
I mean, I know
the dealer thing is not a good argument, because like Tesla still has like staff there and everything.
Right.
Looks at the car. I mean, like, it's not.
But why? I mean, I know that some Tesla reps have said, don't take delivery of this car. It's got too many issues. But I wonder why they don't, you know, buff those things out before they get there. I mean, there's not enough time. Any towers, I'd rather have a superficial quality issues than to ever have to deal with a traditional dealership again. I'm probably with you on that one.
I think a lot of Tesla customers share that sentiment.
Is it possible that the price drops are more about market share than demand issues? If demand was the issue, why produce near record numbers? I wonder.
Well, no, they need to produce near record numbers. And to do that, they need a demand for it. And to have the demand for it, they reduce the price, I think. Like, there's no argument here. I know the super fans are hammering on that. Like, Tesla has never has any demand issue. I don't think Tesla has long-term, like, real demand issues, but they do have cyclical demand issues, and they do try to fix those with price drops like that and other incentive every now and again, like a year of free supercharging and whatnot, like it's the case right now for Model 3 inventory cars.
Jose says, I totally agree with Andy. No more dealerships for me. Can't believe there's a union that protects them and their existence. I don't know if it's a union, but it's a dealership.
Many unions. Association. Yeah, no, you're right. It's not a union. Dealership association.
And they're pretty powerful, and they've been trying to get Tesla off the earth for a while.
Yeah. My favorite one will always be the Virginia Dealer Association, where you have the head of the association in like a presidential type of message, like a presidential address. And it'll when he talks about like going after Tesla, and it sounds like he's a president making a declaration of war against the country. It's hilarious.
Yeah, and it's also surprising that Texas still has limitations on Tesla dealerships.
Yeah, but Tesla smoothed that out so much. Right. It's like they don't really feel it anymore.
So we'll kind of get through these pretty quick. I think it's totally about ramping market share and continually moving the bar, just as traditional auto makes baby steps toward the old bar. They want to absolutely crush internal combustion, kill the dealerships. It would be interesting if Tesla did a cyber van. A lot of construction people prefer vans. I think they talked about partnering with Daimler on a jumper van at one point a few years ago, right?
Yeah, but I don't think that's going to happen because of this printer electric going. Yeah. But we've heard that the Boring Company thing, like a 12-passenger van Tesla, about the Boring Company sort of leaked out of the project here in California and Ontario. So maybe we'll see that or not. That'll be interesting.
So Dan Oberst says the dash on the Cybertruck is compressed paper. I didn't hear that, but
yeah, I think I heard that somewhere.
It's a little bit softer than marble. Mm-hmm. Where are the HVAC vents on the Cybertruck? That's a good question, especially if it's waterproof.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Andy Towers will be first in the line for an all-electric RV, considering the van build someday.
I want to see more of those. Like, I've seen a bunch of concepts and everything, but I want to see more of those.
I feel like once Mercedes starts putting out Daimler puts out those Sprinter vans, it'll be fun.
Yeah, but I also think like a full size like motorhome too. That would be cool.
Innovative Doc asks, Model Y is coming. Do you think that the range will increase anytime soon? Should I buy or wait? I don't think range is an issue anytime soon. Elon said they're not going to do a 100 kilowatt hour version.
Yeah. And also the range is just not a problem at this point.
Yeah.
Especially if now you're talking just about the longer range version. So if anything, actually, if you wait for Model Y, you're going to have shorter range option with a standard range plus that's going to come.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, the only thing I would wait for right now is quality, I think.
Yeah.
That's kind of why I'm holding off on.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get down through here. Another vote for the Tesla RV from Sharon. If they can take all that learned and apply it to the 3, it will reduce the cost as well. Casting.
Yeah, that's fair. But that'll take time though, because they have the Model 3 production nailed down right now. That's the volume. That's where the Tesla gets its volume. So changing anything significant like the casting, it would affect the production a big way. So
I like this idea. What do you think of a full self-driving RV? It could be revolutionary. This is from Lost in the Kerf. Put it on the roam when you're asleep and wake up at your destination, or cruise the city and wake up in front of your workplace. Kind of living the dream there.
Yep. Well, not too far out from it, I think.
Right.
Like
a couple years.
Yeah.
All right. Casting underrated. Likely Tesla will increase the casting to reduce complexity and cost. That and battery cost reduction will be game changing.
Yeah, he's right that on long term, like Tesla seems to be going that way. Like just like I think their dream is like, oh, let's have one big piece and then make the whole body of the car in one casting. Of course, they cannot do that. So they're like, all right, what's the next best thing? Okay, like, well, this piece, we can get it in one. Okay, all right, let's. And then they will do that with as many pieces as they can. And yeah, I can see that happening. That seems to be the trend right now for Tesla.
Sharon Dorr says $650,000 is great for her stock. Don't look at the market today, although I don't think Tesla did that poorly. Joel Sapp question, have you heard of any backup plans for battery day? Currently gatherings more than 10 are restricted in California except for essential services. Don't see it changing.
Well, we're talking about September here, and
hopefully something changes by then.
Yeah, and while the new cases are trending up as we reopen California, the deaths are still looking not too bad, and the ICUs too, so we'll see. It's a waiting game right now.
Value analyst is asking for your guesses on Q2 deliveries. Yeah. We mentioned those briefly.
Yeah. I'd like to see 90,000 personally.
Yeah, 90,000 sounds like a good number. Talking about that a little bit. And then Ray Kirkham, our culture is on the downhill side of the ability to keep expanding its energy usage. We see guys like Musk with huge energy, hunger, and desire, but we are going down, wasting the environment. I think solar panels should help there.
Yeah.
91,000. All right, we're kind of getting to the end of time here. Let's see if we can find one more. GM Bolt, LOL, should be called the LG Bolt. Good car, but GM is completely short-sighted. LG did have a big part in the development of the Bolt, although GM, I think, isn't given enough credit by some. They did get it to market. There's some more talk. Bolt is a compliance car. So I think we should probably end it there.
Yeah. Appreciate everyone for taking the time to listen to the podcast. Wouldn't do it without you listening for sure. And if you're listening to a podcast app like Apple Podcasts and that, we appreciate if you can give us a review, because lately we've been attacked by some people in the review section here that don't like electric for some reason. And so if our fans can actually give us a boost there, we'd appreciate it. And thanks a lot on YouTube too. We're going to have a bunch of new videos coming up, not just the podcast. So you can subscribe to check those out. And we're going to see you same place, same time next week. Have a good one, guys.